Welcome back into Morning Drive. Hour 3 is live here on a Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting inside of Kitchen Notes, the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Chase McCabe, intern producer Charles Chuck Conley the Fifth.
Charles Chuck Conley.
I think
Cologne.
I don't know.
Cologne.
It's just what came out of my
Chip.
Mouth. Chip. As we get
Clifford.
Ready. To... Not Clifford Robinson.
Or the big red dog.
Yeah.
Let's talk some Titans with our man, Teron Davenport, Titans reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. And, of course, the podcast, Talking with TD. What's going on, Teron? How are you, bud?
Hey, what's going on? I'm good. Allergies, you know what I mean? I'm still adjusting to that down here, boy. This is crazy.
Oh, yeah, it's only going to get worse for you.
You got to pop a Zyrtec, man. Take a Zyrtec.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
There you go. So, TD, let me ask you about this. Now, I saw you tweet out about a day ago, ESPN's Football Power Index. I love how ESPN likes to create these random metric assessment things, but they project the Titans to have 8 wins. They give them a 35% chance to make the playoffs. You have them at 11-5 for your prediction, and that's been – one of the common themes on this show, Braden and Derek think 10, 11 is well within play, but yet a lot of the analytics and even the handicappers in Vegas, they all think the Titans are in that 8, 8.5, 9 range. So is this one of the teams, and maybe this is a difficult question, but around the league where the discrepancy in projected win total is as wide as it is for any other team around the league?
Yeah, it probably is as wide for this team as any other. I think it's just that uncertainty of the quarterback. I think that's something that a lot of these national outlets are not really putting stock in. I think they don't believe that he's going to play all 16 games, and I think that's one of the reasons why they feel that this team will only win 8 to 9 games, whereas we were kind of here a little more involved. And we're leaning towards him playing most games, but even with him out, them still being successful.
If I told you, Teron, that Marcus Mariota was a far more efficient quarterback rating and yards per attempt under center than he was in the shotgun, what would your reaction be?
I wouldn't be surprised, but it's interesting because considering how much he played, you know, shotgun in college, and that's where he had his success. So I wouldn't be surprised, but it definitely would be interesting to hear that. Is that true?
Yeah. His quarterback rating is up over 100 under center, and his quarterback rating out of the shotgun was at like 88. He had like 8.6 yards per attempt at under center, 7.3, which is a huge margin for those who don't follow yards per attempt as far as yards per attempt statistic. He also threw the ball twice as often out of the shotgun as he did under center, which is to be understood.
Yeah, I would imagine that under center and the yards per throw or completion rather being higher because of that play action. I think that's something that definitely makes that figure a little bit more. So it's not surprising. And that being said, they need to get more play action, especially if they're going to look to establish the run the way that they're looking to do so this year.
Yeah, because I think Mark is the year from a statistical standpoint where he had his best year. I think his second year, he was phenomenal in the play action. Red zone, he was phenomenal. So maybe they continue to stick with that theme, put him in a lot of situations where he's in, you know, underneath center, where he's doing a lot of play action and getting those sweet spots in the defense. There's a consensus around the football world that everyone respects Louis Riddick and his assessment of either a team or an individual. He has some interesting things to say about a few guys on the Tennessee Titans roster, Corey Davis, comparing him somewhat to Jerry Rice in the sense of, you know, how he runs and maybe his route running. But we understand there was more to Jerry than just him running around. He was highly consistent at catching the football and making plays each and every week. But he had something interesting to say about Derrick Henry, which I didn't really agree with, and it was the notion that Derrick Henry isn't the bell cow. I don't know if the definition of bell cow is no longer the same. I think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, bell cow was a guy that carried the ball 25 times, and it didn't account for catching the ball out of the backfield. But a bell cow nowadays is a lot different. But yet and still, I do believe if you're talking strictly about carrying the football, Derrick Henry is a bell cow type of back. But he said Derrick Henry is not and needs someone else behind him. How do you feel? Do you think his assessment was spot on, or do you see Derrick Henry as, especially from running the football, is he a bell cow type of back?
I think from a carrying the rock perspective, he's 100% a bell cow type of back. And it goes back to what you said, touching the ball running-wise 20 to 25 times. And I think that's what he needs, 20 to 25 touches. Carrying the football. I'm not talking about screens. I'm talking about carrying the football. He needs that to be as effective as he is capable of being. And I think when Lewis Riddick, I think when he is talking about bell cow, he is talking about that three down guy that on third downs, you know, he's still a threat catching the ball out of the backfield, and also a really good guy at picking up the blitz. And we know that's an area for improvement when it comes to Derrick Henry. His Corey Davis comment I thought was interesting. I don't see that similarity stylistically. I remember Corey Davis coming out. I felt that he was very similar stylistically to Terrell Owens, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But back to Henry, yeah, he's a bell cow, and I don't see how you can say he isn't when it comes to looking at him as a ball carrier.
But I think that's the issue, though, and to Derek, as Derek alluded to, Teron, we define bell cow differently today than we did in 1997. Not a single NFL player got more than 19 carries per game last year. Saquon Barkley was number two in the NFL at 16 carries per game last year, but he caught 91 passes. So there is no running back in the world that now averages 20 carries a game. So is it reasonable to expect Derrick Henry to average 22, 23 carries a game when no other human being on the planet is doing that?
I'm not saying expect him to average 20 to 25 carries a game, but you're going to need to have those games where he does have 25 carries, and you're going to need to eliminate those games where he has four. So I think kind of, you know, contextualize it. And those games last year where he didn't have many carries, you know, he would have four for 7 yards, and everybody would say he was a bum and say, well, you know what, you have to understand the type of runner that he is. He's not that guy. And that's why I thought grabbing someone like a Trevion Williams, who can get you, you know, 80 yards on 7 to 8 carries just because of how explosive he is, I thought that would have been a good thing. But he's just not that guy to get you a lot of yards on limited carries.
Teron, final one for me. Report earlier this week that the Tennessee Titans will not be pursuing Ndamukong Suh. Is that the correct decision, or do you think it was worthwhile to at least inquire about him, considering the lack of proven playmakers on your front four?
I think it's the correct decision, but it just goes back to something I've said before. They got to find out what they have in Austin Johnson. This is a high draft pick. You know what I mean? So there are younger guys who are really put on the burner that they have to figure out, okay, what is it that we have in him? I mean, signing Sue would have been something that, yeah, obviously you can never have too many good players, but I think there's things that have to be done from an evaluation standpoint. And then if you sign Sue, is it to a one-year deal? Does he want a one-year deal? You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't do it if I was him, and I wouldn't go beyond a year if I was the Titans, because you got Jeffrey Simmons, you know, and if he doesn't play next year, you guys might not have Braden in the chair with you. So we got to make sure that, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is ready to go and he gets his opportunity.
Don't give me any ideas, Teron.
TD, good stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, for sure. Before I go, D-Mason, I was talking to Drew Bennett yesterday. He asked me to tell you what's up. He's going to be on Talking TD next week.
Ah, old Drew, my running mate. He and I had probably
the best combo
season.
Well,
we had the best combo season in Titan history, and it might have been one of the best combo season in Titan Oiler history.
How much faster were you than he was? in the race? Could he hang with
he
you?
Had, no. No, but no. But Drew was – the thing about Drew, it, I hate the word, but he was sneaky fast. He had long strides.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, he had long strides, and he could pick up yardage. Once he get going, you look at him and you say, "Well, he can't. He's not gonna run by me." And then he gets up on you, and he's by you.
Yep, Teron.
And he can jump. I mean, he can jump out the gym. He was a volleyball guy. He could jump out the gym.
See, Teron, that's all the things those college scouts said about me back in the day, too, man.
Now he could jump higher than I. He was a much higher. He had a higher vertical than I did.
Is that because he was like 3 or 4 inches taller?
No, because the height. Your height doesn't mean anything.
It's how far you get off the floor.
Yes, how far
and,
you get
and
off
how
the
long
floor.
Your arms are. Or whatever.
He was a volleyball guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He had the ability to jump much higher than I did. So
good stuff, Teron. We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Talk to you guys. Take care.
There you go.
See, all you need is a 5'10" burner on one side. And you need a 6'2" volleyball player on the other side, and you're good to go.
See, Drew was 6'4".
Yeah, he was bigger.
Yeah, Drew was, and he had long. He was just a gangly guy.
So you got the red zone big gangly guy on the left side, and then you got the track star on the other side.
Yeah,
you're good to go.
And then if Kevin would have stayed healthy, oh my goodness, we probably and then Justin McCarron's,
So Drew Brennan was sneaky quick.
Yeah.
You just can't,
he wasn't quick.
Straight line
he
fast.
He wasn't quick. He was just, straight once he gets fast. The ball in his hands, he was a big fella. It was going to be hard to bring him down.
Just can't give the white receiver any love, can you?
I gave him all the love. I said he jumped.
You got to make it about race.
I said he jumps higher than me. He had better hair than I did.
No, the jumping higher thing, that's, hey, come on now.
Yeah, he can
why you
got to
make it about
gym.
Race?
Yeah, he can jump out of the gym now.
All right, these breaks were sneaky quick. We're back after this on Morning Drive.
Welcome back, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We had a Friday news dump earlier in the show. Now we're just leaking information. Kale will rejoin us here in a few minutes. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here hanging out, of course. I do want to react to what Teron Davenport had to say there, and I do want to get into a quick discussion about Derrick Henry and about expectations for him as a running back, because I don't want Derrick, us to get wrapped around like what the word bell cow means. Like, I don't really care what it means. I think Derrick Henry can carry the majority of the load on the ground. He's never going to be a pass catcher, but I do want people to understand what a true running workhorse looks like in the NFL today. Mm-hmm. So Ezekiel Elliott led the NFL last year with 304 carries. Mm-hmm. That's an average of 19 carries a game. So there's no human being on the planet that carried the ball 20 times per game last year. It's not a thing in the NFL anymore. It's just not. Saquon Barkley was number two. He averaged 16 carries a game last year. Now he caught 91 passes.
Yeah.
That's a big difference, right? Derrick Henry, here's an interesting stat. I went back and looked at Derrick Henry's first three games last year. 10 carries, 18 carries, 18 carries. That's 46 carries, on average, 15 carries a game. Mm-hmm. If you extrapolate that out through the first three games of the season, Derrick Henry was on pace for 254 carries, which would have put him at like third in the league. Mm-hmm. He didn't get the job done in those three games. Now, the Miami game was really weird and crazy. Mm-hmm. The Houston game, Marcus didn't play. And the Jacksonville game was on the road against a stingy defense where Blaine Gabbert started, right? Mm-hmm. So we can kind of fudge the numbers. But I think it's important for NFL fans to know that even if you are the quote-unquote bell cow of running the football, you're still not going to get to 20 carries a game. You're averaging 19, and I think Teron explained it well. It's not about the number. It's about eliminating the three carries and the four carry games. You got to be more consistent.
Because he was tied in the NFL with carries. He was tied in the NFL with James Conner at number 11 with 215 carries. Ezekiel had 304. Derek, if you take the math based on the first three games, where it's 15 carries per game, so we're at
puts him at like number three in the league.
So that's where he needs to be.
I think that's
fair. He needs to be third in the league in carries or second in the league in carries, because you're not asking him to be a pass catcher. Now, if you're asking him to be a pass catcher, then obviously your touches are going to go down as far as carrying the football.
Right.
But if you're not asking him to be the pass catcher, then he should be in the top five in attempts per rush per game. That's where he needs to be. I've always said Derrick Henry is the type of back kind of like Eddie or Jamal Lewis, these bigger back, Willis McGahee. Yeah, they get you a game or two where, you know, they touch the ball 12 times and get you over 100 yards. That's just everybody. I mean, even the great backs can't do that consistently. Right. They'll get you that game maybe once every 6 or 7 games. But Derrick Henry, like those bigger backs, he gets stronger as the game goes on. And if you run him enough in the fourth quarter, no one wants to tackle him. That's just the way this league is, because I'm going to block up the defensive ends, the defensive front. Those linebackers are not as big as they used to be. Hell, Derrick Henry might be bigger than a lot of linebackers out there. So if I got to tackle Derrick Henry from the linebacker corner to safety position, 18 times a game, come the fourth quarter, I'm making a business decision, and I'm going low, or I'm going to try to dodge it in somehow, some way, finagle my way out of tackling him. That's just the way it is. Derrick Henry is not a guy that can touch the ball 7 times and get you what you need.
And what's funny is the 238-yard game against Jacksonville, 17 carries.
Exactly.
He didn't get the 33-carry game was the next week against the Giants when it was rainy and they needed to pound the football against a terrible defense, and they just kind of kept giving it to him. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you need one of those 33-carry game. But that's a once-a-year type of thing. You don't need that every time. I think my message to fans out there, and this is not just Titans fans, Derrick Henry fans, it's just to football people. You have to recalibrate your view of what a bell cow is or a workhorse or whatever. Like, if Derrick Henry averages 16 carries a game this year, that could make him top 5 in the league. Like, when I started fantasy football back in like the 90s, before even you got into the league, 22, 23, 25 carries a game was a normal thing for running backs. Eddie, normal thing for running backs. I think we just need to, I don't think fans, especially Titans fans with Derrick Henry, don't seem to understand that leading the league in carries is like 18 carries a game now. Because the passing game is so important. And let's be honest, you don't need Derrick Henry to catch 80 passes a year. You've got Deion Lewis to catch 60 passes a year. What you need from Derrick Henry is those 17 carries a game. That's what you need. You need him to build up the steam and the momentum, have 18 carries a game, finish second or third or fourth in the league in carries, and average 4.5 yards a clip. And if you do that with Deion Lewis's, so when you put them together, you've got both dimensions. You've got everything you need out of the running back position, even though it's coming from two guys.
Let's just go back, because the highest carry total this past year was Ezekiel Elliott at 304, 305. I went back to 2002.
Is that Larry Johnson or something?
No, it's Eddie, Jamal Lewis, Sean Alexander, Ricky Williams.
Wow.
Ricky Williams led the league in carries at 383 carries. LaDainian. He caught a ton of passes, but he rushed the ball 372 times. Eddie George, 43 times. Travis Henry, Deuce McAllister, 325. Corey Dillon, 314.
So, like, everybody was over 300.
The top 10, the top 9 rushers, really top 10, because Sean Alexander was at 295. Sean Alexander was at 295. But you had roughly the top 10 rushers at 300 carries for the season. You're not going to get that anymore.
So how many guys, you said 2002.
Yep.
How many guys were over 300 carries that one year? Like 8, 9, 10?
Over 300, 9 guys.
So,
because Tiki was at 304, then Sean Alexander was at 295.
There has been, I'm going back, this year, Zeke Elliott was the only one over 300, 304. Last year, Le'Veon Bell was one player over 300. The year before that, 2016, Zeke Elliott had 322, one guy over 300. The year before that, 2015, Adrian Peterson, 327, only one player. So there have been four players in the last four seasons. Mm-hmm. Four seasons of football, four guys have gone over 300 carries. You had twice that many in one year in 2002. So I think that's a good illustration of where the game is going.
Yeah, I think it started to change in 2007, I believe. It started to change in 2007, because 2006 you had 10 rushers over 300 carries.
See?
In 2007, it went from 10 to 6. And then I think it started to go down. Yeah, 2008, it went from 6 to 5. I think as the years went on after that 02 season, it started to get around guys carrying the ball over 300 times started to get less and less.
Well, and it's not complicated. When you run the football in the NFL, you are basically taking your body and throwing it against 11 brick walls.
Yeah.
For 60 minutes every Sunday. Like, you shouldn't be expected to do that 400 times in a season. That's just insane.
Right.
Even when you're Derrick Henry size and speed. So, I think we just need to recalibrate expectations for what a leading rusher could look like in the NFL. It's no longer 26 carries, 23 carries, 24 carries. It's 17 carries, 18 carries.
Out.
But these other dudes now that are going 16, like Saquon Barkley, 16 carries a game last year, second in the NFL, 91 receptions. That's everybody now. Like LT used to be the only guy that was doing that, you know, and that was a rare thing, right? Now you've got 5 or 6 or 7 guys that are catching that many passes.
Just think, in 2003, they had 13 backs over 300 yards.
Over 300 carries?
I mean 300 carries.
That's crazy.
13 backs over 300 carries. Edgerrin James had 310, and he was 13th in the NFL in carries. Ricky
and that
Williams,
been,
392.
And
Edgerrin James. And that would have been at the top.
Edgerrin James would be number one.
Yeah, he would be number one. And he averaged 4.1. There was only two guys in the top 13 that averaged less than 4 yards, and it was Eddie and Ricky Williams. Ricky Williams led the NFL in attempts.
Now, how about this? I pulled up the reception leaders for 2018, last year. Number 8 in the NFL, Christian McCaffrey, running back. Number 13 in the NFL, he had 107 catches last year. Saquon Barkley, and like you always say, you don't catch 100 passes on accident, right?
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley last year was number 13 in the NFL, running back, 91 catches. James White, not even a starter, right? 87 catches last year, running back, 16th in the NFL, 19th in the NFL. Alvin Kamara, 81 catches. Zeke Elliott had 77 catches, 23rd in the NFL. I mean, Tariq Cohen had 71 catches.
You know, in 2010. In 2010.
Jalen Richard, who the hell is that? He caught 68 passes last year for the Oakland Raiders.
In 2002, well, three. I'm going to go to three. There was only two backs in the top 20, well, top 30 in receptions. And obviously, LT was one.
And he was.
And then special. Priest Holmes. Those two guys were the dual threat guys. Priest had 74. And obviously LT had 100. But now you see more than that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like the number of guys that have 60-plus catches is insane. All right, so just recalibrating expectations there. I think we wanted to do that after talking a little bit about Derrick Henry. We'll take a break. Nick will be back. Sean Henry going to join us when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back in, 8:32 here on a Friday. It's Morning Drive. We're live this morning from Kitchen Oats inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stick to sports coming up in less than 15 minutes, but right now we welcome in the Predators president and CEO, Sean Henry. Sean, good morning. Congratulations. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's an exciting time for the city, isn't it?
It very much is. So obviously the 30-year extension. So set this up for the fan, the Predator fan that says, okay, Predators, Bridgestone Arena, another 3 decades. What does that mean for the fan beyond the obvious, and what can you tell us about things down the road in the future with Bridgestone Arena and the Nashville Predators?
That's a whole lot of question there. I think the best thing about it is when you talk about iconic memories and buildings and venues, sometimes they take on a life of their own. The one thing they all have in common is they're decades and decades and decades old. You know, you remember when your parents brought you your first fill-in-the-blank game, and you always talk about the venue. When you look, you know, Lambeau, Fenway, Wrigley, Soldier Field, Madison Square Garden, you know, they're all 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years old. That's what you want to tap into. And we are in the best possible location for any venue, I'd say, in America, where we sit. What's really nice is with Mayor Bredesen's vision of putting the arena there, he created, you know, the wave of development around the building, that entertainment district. And I think we brought it to life. And then when the Titan Stadium was put at the other end of the road, if you will, it really created something really dynamic. And what's exciting is we're going to play in that place for the next 30 years. And it really isn't a lease extension. It's really a brand new lease. I mean, the old one is terminated, you know, it is approved in June, and it will be. This new one will go into place, but it's we're almost switching roles with the city. You know, right now it's the city's burden to keep the building state-of-the-art. Years ago, we made the decision to never invoke that clause because we thought it was more important for us to figure out revenue streams and funding sources to invest in the building and not try to tap into the city. And you see the result. You know, the building looks pretty new. It's modern, and it's going to be one of the most modern buildings in America for the next 30 years, regardless of what renovations we do or don't do. What we just set in motion will allow that building, just like Madison Square Garden, is to be one of the most modern buildings in the country for the next 30 years.
I really want to hammer that point you just made home as well, Sean, that taxpayer dollars, people that live in the city, there's no longer, if something does come along that you guys want to do or that the city wants to do or the Preds or the management company wants to do, none of that is tied at all to any of the people that live in the area. It's all done through private revenue streams. So I think how unusual is that in all of sports just around the country, and just to drive home to people so that they understand truly that this is all kind of self-sustaining now.
Yeah, and that's real key. It is self-sustaining, and whether that's unique or not is almost secondary to me. I know for the unique part about it is it's rare that a team in a 20-year-old building or 22-year-old building goes to the city and says, we want to stay here. Let's not have that conversation of where's the new arena going to be or the new stadium, fill in the blank. It's in disrepair, it's bad, it's antiquated, it's old, it's not modern. And you guys say these words, everyone says these words, and it's almost understood that a building should be replaced in 20 or 30 years, and that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't understand it, I don't get it. If I lived in one of those cities where it happens, it's bizarre to me. And you look at, there are a lot of cities that are out there that have replaced their arenas after only 20 years, 15 years, 25 years, and I don't understand it, but they all do it for the same reason. Well, no one's investing in it. It's in disrepair. Well, whose fault is that? When I hear people complain about a venue, I always look at the team first and say, well, what are you doing about it? And normally what you hear is, well, it's the city's responsibility or the state's or the county's. And I'm just so proud that we built that environment with the city and give all the credit in the world to Mayor Dean, Mayor Bredesen, Mayor Briley, Mayor Barry for really creating the climate for us where we can take this conversation and move it forward 30 years. But the others for the taxpayers, as you said, who mentioned on the show earlier, that only 25% of our tickets are used by Davidson County residents, that's a good thing. And it, because of where we sit geographically, it allows for so many other counties to feed into our building. So Davidson County built this. The real economic impact, that $560 million, is a result of so many people from outside the county spending their discretionary dollars, not where they live, but right here in Davidson County, and it's a boom. And then when you look at how many people from outside the state, I think it's 10-15% from outside the state, it's the same thing. Regionally, you're exploding the economy for the state as well. So it's a good number that we have 75% of the people outside the county use the building.
So is that typically the norm across the sporting world where that does happen? And then, you know, when you're talking about new stadiums, I think a lot of it has to do with when they build these stadiums, they don't build them with the foresight of things changing. They build them for that time, and I think you guys have done a great job at putting together Bridgestone, thinking in the future. So if you did have to do anything major, it wouldn't have to mean, you know, demolishing Bridgestone and then building it back up. It would be, like you said, just adding some things to a structure that is conducive to you being able to do it.
Yeah, and to answer your question on is it the norm for that percentage of out of county, if you will, or out of city?
Uh-huh.
Not every venue sits in a city that's county government as well. But I think it changes depending on where you are. I assume the Yankees sitting in the Bronx probably have more people come from outside of the Bronx than live there, even more than we do. You look at the St. Louis Cardinals being right on the border of Illinois. I'm sure I bet a third of their people come from out of the state. So it balances, and there are some that are almost on an island where it really is self-sustaining to that region. Mm-hmm. I love where we sit because we do draw from so many states and so many counties while we're also building our own brand. And then, like you said, you know, this building was built really well by Mayor Bredesen and his vision. At the same time, it was built in 1996. So just the amount of time people spent in the building 20 years ago versus what people want to do now, that changes. So what we'll need to do is add bathroom counts, points of sale for food and beverage, unique breakout areas. And we probably will break down a lot of walls and demo But it's going to be fun to do that over the next 30 years.
Sean, I know you and your staff are always trying to get research and data and metrics on the way people consume your product and who is consuming your product. I found it very interesting the TV ratings for the Stanley Cup playoffs after the Nashville Predators were eliminated by Dallas has gone down in the city. Like the PGA Tour and the NBA playoffs were drawing much bigger numbers over the San Jose-St. Louis series. And I'm wondering if you guys keep track of that in the city, the way the league is being consumed within Nashville. Obviously, with you guys being out, it's lower. And do you guys go about it and try to figure a way to keep the city engaged in the sport when your team specifically is out? I didn't know if you had any thoughts of that, if you track that, or if even that's, and I don't want to say an obligation, but do you guys feel like you need to do to get the growth of the league in the city of Nashville? We know the Preds are booming, but as far as the NHL?
Well, yes, of course we track it. And, you know, it's funny, last year, our city, Knoxville, Memphis even, were one of the higher cities in the whole country after the team was eliminated for ratings. And within the city, our ratings were really high. And I think part of it was, you know, you go to the second round last year, you lose at home in a, you know, seven-game series against Winnipeg. You still wanted more. You know, you're still a little enthused and encouraged. I think this year, you know, the expectations for our team, for our fans, was so high, as it should be. And I hope it is every year. That's a good thing. I think all of us got hit in the face with a shovel a little bit. And I think you have a few people, you know, just tuning out. The funny thing is the games are so good right now. When you actually get deep into the data on the ratings for the games and you look at when they're peaking, it's almost as if people get, they can't not look at Twitter or can't look at what's going on in that game. When you look at the San Jose series going into overtime the other night, and the ratings in our market just kept growing as that game went on, and it shows that people still have that interest. But I do think, you know, how we finished this year, a lot of people were very disappointed and needed a break from hockey. But when you look at game five of this St. Louis-Dallas game, I think it was, or series, I think we were the number one sports viewing that week in our city. So it just shows when something is really dynamic going on, people will tune in. Do we have an obligation to grow the game? Of course. And that's why we're building rinks. You know, we opened the one in Antioch a few years ago. Bellevue opens in a few months. It was just announced in Montgomery County that we're going to be working with the county and Austin Peay on an event center and an ice rink. So, yeah, we take that on pretty seriously.
Sean, I know you got to go, but real quickly, and you mentioned knocking down walls. I'm assuming everything's on the table. Can you get? I'm not trying to pin you down here, but can you give any of the fans any ideas, sort of the creativity that's bubbling right now as to what Bridgestone could look like over the next 10, 12, 15 years?
Well, yeah, we did a visioning study about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, basically looking at the architecture, like what could be, whether you build a tower or not, rip walls out to have Broadway invade the building spill into Demumbrian or 5th or 6th. I mean, all those things are on the table. But we've been pretty public about some of the things that we want to do. Continuous AV renovation over the next 2 or 3 years, from new scoreboards, external scoreboards, you know, video, sound that, you know, emits in and out. We talked about probably building a press box, ideally. Maybe it's next summer, maybe it's summer after, which would allow us to add about 1,200 seats to the venue, which does two things. It allows us to continue to grow without all that burden being on the backs of our fans. It'll also allow us to manage that get-in price, if you will, to keep that as modest as possible. We're proud. We have one of the lowest get-in prices, you know, for our games in the league, and that's an important thing. As we continue to grow our fan base, as more and more people move into town and more people enjoy the game, we want to make sure that that first or second experience, we don't put a barrier up from a price standpoint. So,
Sean, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Continued success.
One thing, though, I got to add. I got to tell you, my daughter's mad at you, Nick.
Me? I mean, I usually tick off my wife, but I ticked off your daughter now?
I was making her breakfast this morning when you said that perhaps our fans weren't knowledgeable, and that's why they're not as passionate or disappointed over losses. And I broke the plate. I was smashing the avocado toast on because our fans are as knowledgeable, if not more knowledgeable, than any fan base in this country. And I will argue with that and defend it and put it out there. And you, I know you've only been here a little time, but I assume when you got here, you were shocked how knowledgeable our fans were. And I think every day, more and more people around the country realize this is a passionate hockey market, and it's growing every day.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Sean.
So you owe my daughter avocado toast without charge of completed.
I don't think he can make avocados. Avocado
that's,
toast.
That's pretty cheap. We can do that. We can do that.
Guys,
he can purchase
so
it, but not make it.
Right. Although the price of avocados is going up.
That's true. I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah.
All right, there he is, Sean Henry.
You got to buy avocado toast?
I do love – I know that it's like the hipster thing. People like make fun of like California.
I hate avocados.
I love tomato, a fried egg, tomato, cheese, and avocado on a piece of toast. Oh,
I hate
my God.
Avocado. I don't know.
What's wrong with you?
The fascination with this avocado toast
It's a superfood, and it's delicious.
I know it's a
creamy,
superfood.
It's delicious.
But is it going to make me stronger? Will I be able to fly like Superman? It's a superfood. But
it's not as good. Food's going to make you fly.
It's a superfood.
What the hell you talking about?
It's not as good until you turn it into guacamole.
See, I'm not a guac fan either.
But that's a your taste thing.
No, everybody does it. No one likes guac.
Nobody likes guac.
Nobody likes guac.
Everybody loves guac.
Congratulations, you found a way to shut Braden up. Good job.
Yes.
He literally just threw his headset down.
It was a mic drop. He dropped his mic and walked off. Yeah, he threw the mic.
I just feel bad that I ticked his daughter off. I mean, I enjoy ticking my wife off, but I don't want to tick any other females off. That's a bad workout of me. All right, stick to sports is next. Stay there.